All right, sit with us now for a fascinating discussion over the next couple of segments regarding a Supreme Court decision yesterday, unanimous decision. But there's nothing settled about the Fourth Amendment in the 21st century. The justices yesterday ruled unanimously that police violated the Constitution when they placed a global positioning system tracking device on a suspect's car and monitored the vehicle's movements for 28 days. Justice Antonin Scalia wrote in the opinion, "We hold that the government's installation of a GPS device on a target's vehicle and its use of that device to monitor the vehicle's movements constitutes a search." This, of course, refers to the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unlawful search and seizure. It was a case we talked about with our next guest a few weeks ago when we took a look at what the important cases were going to be this year. And certainly this is one of them. Jeff Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Mark Rotenberg also joins us. He's the director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, one of the attorneys who filed an amicus brief in support of Jones in United States v. Jones, which is the case that we are referring to. Mark Rotenberg, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
All right. So, Jeff, let me start with you. This is about police putting a device on a car that didn't already have one. It's a unanimous decision. In a sense, this was a little bit of the low-hanging fruit on the First Amendment's sort of threat regarding all of the electronic transformations that have taken place in the last couple of decades.
It was low-hanging fruit, but it's important not to understate the importance of the decision. This is the most important privacy case of the decade, an occasion for dancing in the chat rooms in terms of digital privacy. If the justices had ruled the other way, there really would have been very little protection for privacy in public places against electronic surveillance. And the fact that they were unanimous in rejecting the Obama administration's extreme and unnecessary claim that we don't have any expectations of privacy once we're outside the home really will lay the groundwork for future cases. So it's a day for celebration.
Mark Rotenberg, your view.
Yes, I agree with Jeff. I think it was a very important decision. There was a distinction, of course, about how to reach the result, and there was a grouping of the justices as to the best theory. But the theory that the court relied on in Justice Scalia's opinion is a very solid foundation, and it is going to make possible good decisions in similar cases in the future.
It seems to me that the placing of a device on a car is more along the lines of a wiretap, where you are taking an electronic situation and toggling it into a configuration where it reports to authorities in some sense. In the case of a wiretap, it'd be a telephone. In the case of this GPS device, it's a it's tracking information that then is relayed to the police. That makes sense to me. But what if a device already is telling someone my location? Does that constitute a search if the police suddenly pay attention to that, Jeff Rosen?
That's exactly the question that Justice Samuel Alito asked in his path-breaking concurrence. He said it doesn't make sense to focus on the property interest, even for wiretapping. The court held back in the 1920s that they weren't a search because you didn't have to break into someone's home or office to put the wiretap on. You could put it on the wires leading up to the office on the outdoor sidewalk. So Alito said it doesn't make sense to focus on property. And then he said, what if the cops had access to a LoJack device installed in the car that was broadcasting geolocational information without any physical trespass? Or what happens if they access cell phone data, which is broadcast by Apple, and again can be obtained without a physical search? So it was for all those reasons that Alito said, rather than focusing on the property interests, as the majority did, he would have said it's long-term surveillance that's unreasonable. There's a difference between tracking someone for a day and tracking them for a month, because you can learn so much more about someone when you track them for a month. And he refused to specify the precise line at which the Fourth Amendment kicks in, but he said unless we protect against long-term ubiquitous surveillance, then people will have less privacy today than they did in the 18th century.
To take that argument of Justice Alito, Mark Rotenberg, does that require the government to establish a situation where the law enforcement officials have to affirmatively wear blinders and can only lift their blinders to see this electronic information with a court order?
Well, I think that's a key principle in the Fourth Amendment, actually. People are oftentimes surprised. They say, well, if this information is available to the public, should it not also be available to the police? But, of course, the Fourth Amendment requires that before the police conduct a search of a particular person, they have to establish probable cause. And that's typically a determination that's left to a court. And so we have the playing out of the checks and balances of the U.S. form of government between the police and the judiciary, helping to safeguard the right to privacy, which is actually very much at issue in this case, because, of course, what the police asserted was that they could continue to engage in this type of tracking without going to the court and without going to the warrant. So in that respect, it's a very important decision as well. But I think, John, also to your earlier point, I mean, these analogies are important and were very much on Alito's mind and in his concurrence, because he felt, of course, that Justice Scalia's opinion was too limited. But I think at the same time, Scalia was sensitive to this argument, and he was saying, in effect, I'm not ruling out that approach. I'm not saying if that case comes before the court, I wouldn't agree with you. He was saying, but on this day, at this moment, let's start here and then see what happens next.
Mark Rotenberg is the director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. Jeff Rosen is a professor of law at George Washington University. I want to talk a little bit later about what the court is going to have to determine about our relationship with devices. But before we go, Jeff, are there cases on the docket? Are there cases in the pipeline that might begin to answer some of these broader questions of Justice Alito?
There are a lot of cases bubbling up in the lower courts about these issues involving computer searches, for example. How broadly can the government have access to data, or cell phone data seizures? For all these reasons, it was really significant that Justice Sonia Sotomayor, in a separate concurrence, said that the court might have to reconsider the idea that when you turn over information to Apple or Google, they can turn it over to the police without limits. That's called the third-party doctrine. And in an age when most of our data is stored on distributed third-party servers in the digital cloud or by Google and Yahoo, that would mean that we have no expectation of privacy in any data that is stored by third parties. So the Supreme Court hasn't taken any of these cases yet, but the lower courts are actively considering them, and that's why this is clearly only the first of many grappling with the question of digital privacy.
Quick fact before we take a break, does a judge need a court order, or does the police need a court order to get a security cam video from a retailer?
That actually happens fairly routinely.
Really? Okay, that's great. I love the fact that you guys kind of disagree. It's an indication of the gray area we're in here. But we'll get some more precision after a break. Jeff Rosen, professor of law at George Washington University. Mark Rotenberg, director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. 9-zip. The court rules police can't put a GPS tracking device on your car and watch you. Continuing now with Jeff Rosen and Mark Rotenberg, let's clear up that lack of precision. Jeff Rosen, can cops obtain a security cam video from a retailer without a court order?
I don't think we were disagreeing. They have to make a request, a subpoena of some kind, so you wouldn't need a warrant, but I think a subpoena would do it.
Right. Okay, so let me do a thought experiment with you. I hope we have enough time for this. Is my computer and myself, is our relationship an attorney-client relationship where the information the computer has is confidential unless a court rules that it must be delivered to law enforcement authorities? Is my cell phone more a commercial space where it actually belongs to Verizon or AT&T, and that information is stored by the cell phone provider and doesn't represent my domain? How have courts ruled on this, Jeff Rosen?
This is exactly the question that courts are debating. Some courts have essentially held that anything stored on my computer, especially if it's stored in a third-party database, is a commercial space in which I have no expectation of privacy. But in a path-breaking decision, Judge Alex Kaczynski on the Ninth Circuit, who really has become one of the heroes of digital privacy, said that that's completely unpersuasive, that a computer or a cell phone should be treated like a private diary, which at the time of the framing, when it was stored in a locked drawer, had top Fourth Amendment protection. So he proposed a whole series of tests for limiting computer searches, saying the police had to ensure that they only looked at relevant information and didn't look at innocent but embarrassing information. There had to be neutral oversight. They had to seek subpoenas before they could search the entire computer.
Fascinating.
The Supreme Court hasn't embraced this, but it's exactly this question. You pose it so well about whether our digital diaries should have the same protection as paper diaries used to have that the courts are struggling with.
Mark Rotenberg, if a file is password protected, does that constitute the same status of information as a diary in a locked box?
Well, it argues actually for a higher level of privacy protection because the user has taken some affirmative steps to protect the data. And now, in fact, we have a very interesting series of cases before the courts, which is whether the government can compel an individual to produce their password key, which implicates not the Fourth Amendment, but actually the Fifth Amendment, the right to be free from self-incrimination. So we're watching closely a couple of cases in which the government is claiming that it can make a person give up their password phrase to get access to an encrypted file.
To both of you, before we go, is it ultimately incompatible that commercial users of digital space have completely free access to surveil citizens and the government doesn't? Ultimately, there's a breaking point there, Jeff?
Yes, it doesn't make sense that Google and Yahoo are completely unregulated by the Constitution, and citizens can spy on each other without limits, but the government has severe limits. And that's why, at some point, as the court noted, Congress is going to have to pass laws that regulate private sector surveillance as well as the government.
Mark Rotenberg, take us out.
Yes, we need to step up with privacy protection for commercial actors also.
Mark Rotenberg is the director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, one of the attorneys who filed an amicus brief in support of Jones in United States v. Jones, the 9-0 decision the Supreme Court handed down yesterday, which prohibits authorities from installing GPS devices on citizens' vehicles. And Jeff Rosen, of course, professor of law at George Washington University. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.